Welcome to the Whole Package Cash, a semi-monthly news and discussion show about the world of DB2. Today is August 3, 2013, and this is episode number 3. My name is Ian Bjerhovda, and once again, I am here with my partner in crime, Fred Sobotka. How's it going, Fred?
Hey, not bad, Ian. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I've been hanging in there.
All right. I was a little disappointed to see not much new battle on the DB2 Blue Wars with SAP HANA. So we're going to have to move on to other topics, I guess.
Well, it happens all the time. Unfortunately, maybe we'll have to say goodbye to that topic.
No, it'll be there next time. Come on, don't let me down.
Come on, SAP, give us some more. So I've been sad. We didn't get any follow-up yet on iTunes. I don't know if it's because DB2 DBAs do not use iTunes or they just don't want to give feedback. I would really like to see some. So if you're listening and you're using iTunes, please check us out and send some feedback via iTunes. Now, did we get any follow-up on last week's episode?
Yeah, we had a question from one of the listeners. It's from DB2WTF. He asks, is it weird to feel reluctant to ask beginner questions on sites like Stack Overflow since it reveals my lack of knowledge? And I thought that was a really appropriate question since you and I spend a lot of time on Stack Overflow, and we've been in the top 10% of people in the DB2 category for a while and enjoying all the perks and status that come with that. So what do you think of that question? I mean, have you asked any questions on Stack Overflow rather than answered them?
I don't think so. I certainly understand that question, right? Because, I mean, as a consultant, you put yourself out there as asking all these questions. It certainly could feel funny if someone is bringing you in to answer their questions. But I think that you don't have to go and prove to everyone that you know everything, right? I think that the most useful consultant is someone who knows what they know and knows what they don't know. And I think that applies not just to consultants, but to DBAs. From a conservative standpoint, if you know that you don't know something, better to admit it and go from there rather than pretend that you do know it and make a mistake.
I'd have to agree with most of that. I've asked questions on Stack Overflow, not many, but I have been hesitant to ask questions in my own subject area, even if it's about a very targeted thing. It doesn't reveal me to be ignorant. It's just that there's this little thing I'm trying to get some clarification on. But outside of DB2 and databases and that kind of thing, I haven't really hesitated.
Yeah, I think that some of that depends on who the person who is going to answer the question is. And when you look on Stack Overflow, there are certain people you know who are going to answer the DB2 questions. There are, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 people who tend to answer DB2 type questions. And so I guess, do you think that you're likely to find an answer there, or are you going to look somewhere else that you think you're going to have more success in finding an answer to your question?
Yeah, the DB2L list through iDug comes to mind as being a really good DB2 resource.
Right.
But it doesn't attract a lot of the newer people. I think the questions I see about DB2 on Stack Overflow tend to come from fairly casual or new users of DB2. And I would probably be more reluctant to ask a DB2 question on Stack Overflow because I don't know if I want to be lumped in with this level of questions where I'd probably be more open to asking a DB2 question on DB2L, knowing that my peers are experienced DB2 people who know that there's so much to understand about the engine. So I guess the question is legit. It's a tricky spot. Everything's Googleable. You want to find something out about someone, especially if they're a consultant and you want to gauge their activity online. And just make sure you ask the right questions and show that you're asking a question that's come from some research. And that's the kind of thing that DBAs want anyway, is questions from developers and sysadmins that show a bit of legwork on their end before they take it to the DBA.
Right. Well, I agree. I think that's also a good transition into some of the things that we've been seeing going on around the world of DB2. There was a very good post from Craig Mullins a couple of weeks back called The Top 10 Things to Do Before Visiting a DBA. And I think that what you just said ties exactly into that.
Yeah, Craig is an excellent person to write about, not just DB2, and his DB2 books for the mainframe are right up there with IBM's greatest books. So he's great in that regard, but he also just writes well about the craft of being a DBA, what it means, and the roles and responsibilities. I remember looking at his book about database administration almost 15 years ago, and it was a real eye-opener about the differences in that DBA role. So anyone who's finding themselves in a position of having to be a DBA or being a part-time DBA or being thrown into it like I was because I could spell SQL, Craig's book about database administration, which has been redone lately, is an excellent resource to just find out more about what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, it's nice because after Craig's post, Ember Crooks on her DB2 Commerce website posted a really nice post just talking about DBAs and how they present themselves or what kinds of DBAs there tend to be. And I just thought it was really interesting to read that post and look at how I am as a DBA and try and avoid some of those negative connotations that non-DBAs have about us.
And if you haven't read it, the column headers of her excellent blog post she posted on August 1st were DBA as the all-knowing, uncaring consultant versus the half-absent, obstructing idiot. And I thought, those are two pretty big categories where you hear a lot of DBAs being lumped in with. And she makes some good points about why someone might have that opinion of a DBA if they didn't know more about what was really going on behind the scenes and how DBAs can sometimes rightfully earn those reputations and how DBAs can work to unravel those reputations.
Right. Yeah, it was a really, really great post. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. One thing that I've seen also recently has been a little bit more blog community. Some of the stuff I see in other worlds that I'm involved in are, you'll see someone will put a blog post up, and then rather than just taking discussion into comments on one particular blog post, you may see other blogs write a response to the other blog entry. And it kind of makes for an interesting community. And I've started seeing that lately. There's this relatively new, to me at least, blog called db2champ.com from a IBM champion in India named Sriharsha Naik. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing his name wrong. But he looked at Craig Mullen's post that we just referenced and added his own thoughts to that conversation. So I think it's nice to see that organic community starting to perhaps grow on the DB2 side.
Yeah, it's encouraging to see that kind of dialogue because people are bringing different perspectives to it. And one of the things that the DB2 world, I think, really has is a huge variety of scenarios of where it's being used. You and I both have customers on the smaller end who don't see DB2 as being much more to them than a mail server or a file server, and that it's largely taking care of itself. It's doing important work, but it's not something that someone is sweating over each day and trying to hold it all together because things are just overwhelming. And then there are these huge Fortune 500 companies or huge banking institutions where they may have DB2 on the mainframe and they've got data sharing in a parallel sysplex, and it's this massive environment and they'll have more people and they're doing things differently. And just in the world of DB2, when you start to see those types of points of view intermingle and people writing back and forth about their take on some of these things, just like lately of what it means to be a DBA and why is it worth doing a good job and what should you be focusing on, there's some really good observations that are going to come out.
Yeah, I agree. So one other thing that came out in the last couple of weeks is IBM has launched a certification members site where you can log in and see all of your past certifications. And you also have the option to actually make your profile public so other people can visit the site and see all of the certifications that you've attained.
Those are pretty slick, and it's a cool way to brag that you ducked out of an IDUG or IOD session and got certified in your spare time because you just went in and slammed through the test. So it's cool that they're making it available to show it off. It could get you more points with your manager. It could give you potentially a justification to go to a conference or a training course or things to add to your toolbox when you're showing that you're developing this competency and you're increasing your value to the organization.
Right. And, you know, also for someone who is looking for a job, it adds some definite credibility to say, yeah, you can actually verify on IBM's site that I am certified for whatever. One of the things actually was interesting is going back through my list of certifications. It goes back so far that I have a certification for DB2 before it was DB2 for Linux, Unix, and Windows. I have the Certified Solutions Expert on DB2 UDB v7.1 Database Administration for Unix, Windows, and OS 2.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I think that was one of my first certs, too. I was expecting to go further back. I was expecting you to like trot out some DB2 2.1 common server cert, which would be completely believable. Yeah, I was getting into DB2 or as a DBA around 7.1, and I was irritated that here I was trying to get this 7.1 certification, and the IBM classes that I was attending on my EdPass were often not upgraded to 7.1 yet. It was still 6.1 material. So anyway, those are great times.
Yeah. Well, it's funny when you still see people refer to DB2 as DB/2.
Yeah.
Harkening back to the OS2 days.
They'll come around, or they'll retire one way or the other.
One of the other things that's cool, and I've known about this for quite a while, is from the certification site, you can order fancy certificates. But then the thing that I thought was more cool is you can get a fancy little wallet card that it's printed with your name and the certification level and everything like that. And it costs a couple dollars, like $5 or $6 or something to get both of those. But I don't know, I just thought it was fun.
That's a cool one for another world that I walk in occasionally, which is that of the frequent flyer hotel traveler person. It's kind of like getting diamond status with DB2 or something. You've got this certification card now. So you know, the one you can trot out at the airport lounge when you're doing that, like that scene from Up in the Air, and you're going to trump them with that one. Believe me, they're going to trot out, like, I don't know, Emirates Air plutonium level status, and you're going to trot out your DB2 certification card, and you're going to win that one.
Yeah, I'm sure the look I would get would be dismay.
So if you're not already carrying way too many of these hotel and airline cards, go look up your certifications, and if not, get some, and then order those cards so you can trot them around the office when someone has some doubts about what you're saying as a DBA. You can trot out the card, and that'll just stop the argument cold right there. You don't have to go to any more drastic measures beyond that.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about DB2 Blue.
Of course.
I came across some secret footage that I found somewhere on the internet. It was a guy that was coming out of a focus group that was previewing DB2 10.5 Blue performance. Let's take a listen. It's pretty amazing. You'll hear the IBM rep speaking first.
Maybe Blue, but it's the bomb.
Ah, tight, 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 yeah! Blue, yellow, pink. Whatever, man, just keep bringing me that.
Very nice. I'm that's a good one. I was similarly excited. I attended the briefing, a couple of briefings on this, and I pretty much felt the same way. Maybe less of a snort kind of action, but yeah, it is. It's exciting stuff, and customers are really getting amped up about it. They're getting tweaked all over the place with the potential for DB2 Blue acceleration and enhancements. So sure, that's. Let's see what comes from this. And maybe we could do DB2 Blue all weekend and then go digging in the front yard for data, for big data.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, that was a cut from Breaking Bad, which is scheduled to open its last season, I think, this week, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So I know that there are a lot of people who are extremely excited about that. On the marketing front, it was funny. I saw one tweet come across my path from a person named Tim Davidge, who I recognize his name from, now don't hold this against me, but from Usenet. And he posted something that seemed a little bit like he was annoyed seeing so much talk about Blue.
What was his beef?
I think that he's just tired of reading about it. Now, it sounds like he is a DB2 on Windows user. And since Blue is a feature that is currently not available on Windows, maybe he was a little bit annoyed by that fact.
Well, I could see that, but are you going to get that kind of money's worth out of DB2 when you've got Windows doing whatever it does with the rest of your system resources? I mean, those advanced enterprise licenses aren't cheap, and I can't think of an organization that would, you know, license that version of it and be content with just trying to squeeze out whatever spare cycles are left after all of Windows is taking its cut, versus something that I think you can really nail down and get more precise return on your investment.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of an interesting question about using DB2 on Windows. I mean, I have some customers who use DB2 on Windows and even use InfoSphere Warehouse on Windows. So I don't know. Does it really matter whether Blue is something that's available on Windows? Are there really enough customers that would actually choose to run this on Windows if they had the opportunity?
Yeah, they'd have to be customers who are a Windows-only shop, because as soon as you've got a shop that is willing to run Linux or Unix for anything, I can't see the compelling case for wanting to run something like Blue on Windows. I could be wrong. I'm not a Windows developer, so I've seen applications that people want to rework in Windows and what their options are, and those options just keep shifting. And I know it changes a lot. I'm thrilled that IBM has kept up with the different trends in Windows as much as they have. IBM tends to be very upfront about supporting new versions of Windows, new features in Windows, in DB2, sometimes even before SQL Server. So it's not like IBM doesn't know how to make Blue happen on Windows. They've just chosen not to, and I can't say I'd fault them for that. The last thing I'd want is for IBM to spend more resources getting things done on platforms that aren't going to produce a benefit. I'd rather have them work on things that I and my customers want. And so far, I haven't heard customers saying that they want Blue on Windows, but I haven't taken too many formal surveys. And if you want to use Blue on Windows, feel free to send some feedback so that we know, and maybe we'll cash in a mob favor and see if we can help make it happen for you. I think we got a couple left, right, Ian?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it used to be that Windows had a really bad reputation, right? You know, stability was not so great. Maybe performance wasn't so great. But I think that a lot of that has been resolved, right?
I think so. I mean, your DB2 installations run on Windows for long periods of time, right? I mean, none of my Windows DB2 servers need anything like a regular reboot or an instance restart. The stuff just runs. It's boring.
Yeah, exactly. More than likely, the only time I'm going to need to, you know, have DB2 outage is because there's some critical Windows patch that has to be applied.
Right.
That said, there are definitely some nice advantages to Windows. One of them is, I mean, every organization that I've worked in is using Active Directory to manage all their users. And when you don't have to create separate users for DB2, that's really nice. It makes life really easy. You just create a group in the domain and grant access through that group, and you never have to worry about users and passwords and all that, right? The help desk would take care of that stuff for you.
Just be careful, because when you take that approach to DB2 authentication, and DB2 is now looking up Active Directory, you got to make sure that your connection management isn't all over the place and really chatty, because that's going to take extra time to get those connections authenticated. I've seen in a best case scenario authentication for Windows DB2 connections taking 30 milliseconds. And that's okay if you're running a cache and things are being reused properly and you don't have rampant reconnecting in your app. But if you've got any kind of crazy town happening in your app and there's a lot of connections being open and closed, that extra hit of going all the way out to Active Directory can really slow things down.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen that also. So, well, IBM obviously made a choice. I'm sure it was based on feedback from their customers as to whether or not they really needed it to be on Windows or not. But I just thought it was interesting that it was not released for Windows, given just all of the talk over the years about how IBM says DB2 is DB2 is DB2. and that frequent comment that's made about 99% of the code base is identical between the platforms.
Sure. Well, we've got a taste of this with PureScale as well, so I'm not terribly surprised, but I also wouldn't be surprised if enough customers lined up with brickbats made of money and then bludgeoned IBM into putting Blue into Windows. It could totally happen, and it wouldn't be the first time if it did. So let's find out what the customers want and see if we get it or not.
Right. So also on Blue, you know, we talked a little bit about the whole idea in episode one of the size of the server that's required to run Blue right now. So that kind of made me wonder, DB2 or IBM has a utility that comes with DB2 10.5 called DB2 Convert, which will change an existing row-based table into a column-based table. It made me wonder how many customers are actually going to be doing that on the existing hardware for a database, as opposed to creating a new database on a larger server and moving the data from the old server to the new server.
Yeah, I agree. It does not sound like something that's going to come into play right now, unless they're doing a DB2 convert on a copy of a backup that maybe they brought in.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So right now, I don't think anyone's going to be running DB2 convert on production, but it just is another option to get that stuff over.
Right.
Do they have an unconvert?
Rollback?
Sure.
Craig Mullins also had a blog post talking about compression in Blue. And that's one thing that I think is interesting, right? We have to be a little bit careful about how that's talked about. Because one of the things that I learned at iDug, there was a DB2 10.5 intensive course on the last day of the conference. And one of the things that came up in there, and it was just a minor note, but I found it interesting enough to write it down in my notes, was that when IBM talks about compression in 10.5 and how you're getting more compression in 10.5 than you would in earlier versions, a part of that compression that they talk about comes from the fact that they no longer have indexes or MQTs. So in a 10.1 database, perhaps you may have 50-60% of the size of your data that gets allocated towards MQTs or indexes. And if you can eliminate all that, that's a pretty big space savings. So while I think it's definitely valid to say we need a lot less disk, calling it compression, I think, is a little bit a stretch.
Yeah, it sounds a bit sneaky. The terminology, I think, is tricky on this. And I can see the argument for claiming that savings, because if a row organized table requires these indexes and these MQTs to deliver the performance that the workload requires, and this Blue table does not, I could see the argument for comparing the size of each scenario and claiming all of the difference as savings. I mean, is it really apples to apples in that situation? And it is technically a savings if you don't need those in the new version, but I can see it also being considered to be a bit sneaky.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's semantics, but again, DBAs are typically very detail-oriented, right?
Yeah, and it's still nowhere close to the shenanigans that Oracle pulls, so who knows? I mean, they're getting more complaints from organizations, and it's getting kicked over to the FTC, so I'd say the claims about Blue compression and what the true savings are is nowhere close to the kind of absurdity that's going on in other areas of the industry.
Yeah, that's one thing I do miss. Our friend Connor O'Mahony, who used to work for IBM in the marketing arm, would frequently blog about some of the insanity that you would see in Oracle ads or claims. And I miss seeing his viewpoint on some of these.
He you could tell from his blog post that he was wearing brass knuckles when he typed those things, and he still didn't type anything wrong. So that in itself is admirable. He is a rough and tumble guy when it comes to getting the facts out and getting the statistics out and really showing what's going on. And very few IBMers laid it out as well as Connor did.
Yeah, well, I think you could expect the toughness from him, given that he's an Irish guy living in Boston who is a big fan of the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah, he's pretty thick-skinned, I'd guess.
Yeah, brass knuckles may be quite literal.
So don't mess with Connor.
All right, so let's move on. What have you been working on lately?
Well, I've been inspired after OSCON. There's so many great things going on in the world of open source. I talked to some startups and some established firms, and I'm not going there to like chuck my databases out the window or anything, but there are an awful lot of good support tools out there. So I've been keeping up in what open source is offering for DB2 in terms of logging and monitoring, and whether they're products that you can license or use on a cloud environment, or code you can actually download. So a sweep of GitHub, seen some good contributions in the world of DB2, and I think it might be worth checking it out if you're a DB2 DBA. For example, one of the Stack Overflow guys has been posting utilities to help Nagios monitor DB2. And Nagios is one of these just rock solid things that you find in a lot of shops. And it doesn't monitor DB2 out of the box. You have to teach it how to monitor DB2. And the folks that do benefit, because now you've got this really solid product out there that's watching after DB2 as well as anyone could with their eyes and ears. So keep an eye out. Look at GitHub. And then also, otherwise, I like Subversion for managing my source control. And I tend to check a lot of my stuff into Subversion, different scripts and scraps for my toolbook of DBA commands. And that's easier to manage if you're using Data Studio, because Data Studio is based on Eclipse, and Eclipse can be connected to Subversion through the Subclips plugin for Eclipse. So with Subclips, you can actually check scripts into and out of Subversion and run them in your Data Studio environment for DB2. So that's a pretty useful thing. The tricky part about Subclips is that more recent versions of Data Studio may require you to run Eclipse as an administrator on Windows so that that plugin can be installed. So just keep that part in mind, and you'll be running Data Studio and checking stuff into source control and pulling it down wherever you need it and keeping track of all this stuff so that you're not losing pieces of work or having different versions pop up in the wrong places.
Yeah, that's cool. GitHub is a social, it's a distributed version management system, right? There's a tool called Git, which is like Subversion, a source code control system. And GitHub is a website that you can store your Git repositories on. And a lot of coders do that, and a lot of coders will put stuff up there almost, you know, one to share little utilities or programs or whatever. But then also I see a lot of coders who on their resume will just put a link to their GitHub account so that potential employers can look at what they're able to do. But it's pretty cool.
And there are models where you can have private repositories on GitHub just for your own convenience. But if you're working on a public project, I don't believe it costs anything to host a GitHub repository for that. So that's another incentive to share what you've built. If you've customized something to work with DB2, for example, and you put up a project, it'll also be something that other people can look at, interact with, and perhaps even improve.
Have you ever used version control to store database objects themselves, say like DDL?
Yeah, I think it's a natural relationship, you know, peas and carrots, basically, because programmers are going to store their stored procedures as repository files. And if there's a need for DDL, a different DDL, it's cool to be able to correlate the DDL changes that are necessary with the routine changes. But at the very least, getting your DDL checked in and treating it like a first-class deliverable, I think, is really important. The challenge is that DB2 look is not the best way to do this, because first of all, it comes out as one big file, and secondly, it puts a timestamp into the data. So even if nothing's changed, DB2 will still generate things that make it look different in a diff between two copies of the same database.
Right. I've gone back and forth on this. I think it's a challenging topic, because do you just store the DDL of an object, say a create table statement, and then when you make a change to that, then you just update that file and add the new column, say, or remove the columns that you're dropping from the table? Or do you just make those changes and then let the version management show you the differences over time? Or do you store the scripts that you use to change the database, right? So you create a table and then you have a script that alters the table to add a column. And the problem is that when you do that, then you just have a set of files, right? Each additional script that you need to get a table or a database, whatever, from one structure to the next. But then you have a whole bunch of separate files that never really are going to get altered at any time unless, you know, you make a mistake. Whereas when you store a single file and you just make updates, it fits more in line with the traditional source code control where you're making changes to some source code file over time and you rely on the repository to show you what those changes were over time.
I've gone both ways on that depending on how far and wide a database is deployed. So there's a company I work with that basically builds the same application for different organizations. So they're responsible for managing each of those deployments. And in that situation, because there's so many live databases out there that need to be brought from one set of structures to the next, whether it's adding a column and then creating some procedures that involve that column and so on, dropping and changing an index, the method you described that uses those individual alter files and we number them sequentially and then we check them in. And you're right, we don't really change them after they're created because they're meant to take an existing deployed database to the next step, kind of in that Ruby on Rails approach of evolving your schema. But if it was just the one copy of the database and the rest of the copies out there were basically just test and dev snapshots of prod, you might not get as much benefit from this tail of the tape by persisting each file that brought the database from one version to the next.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough problem. But if you have any experience in this, or if your company has done anything along these lines, do send us feedback and let us know. We'd be very interested to hear what any of you are doing.
The nuttier, the better. And then you've got the next thing of now in version 10 with time travel query too. So maybe one day we'll have the system catalog tables all set up for time travel query.
That would be quite interesting.
Select from this table as the structure looked 2 weeks ago.
All right. Well, that's another good episode. Where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm DB2Fred on Twitter.
And I am IDBJORH on Twitter. If you have any feedback, please visit our website or use iTunes to send it in. Or, of course, you can send it to our Twitter account for the podcast. That's PKGCash. And we will look forward to talking with you next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good day.